Hey guys, everybody doing okay today? All right, let's do this. This is fun. Before I get started, I actually want to start off by thanking my two co-authors on this, Dr. Janet Arno. Without her guidance, this would not have been possible. And one of my DIS, Mackenzie Szymanski, she made this possible as well for all of her hard work. So a little bit of background. For the Indianapolis program, we serve not just Indianapolis, but the five or seven surrounding counties around it. Makes just under 1.8 million people that we're serving. So really for this project, we concentrated on the 2015 syphilis statistics. So we had 158 PNS cases and 152 early latent cases. 25% of our cases had a previous history of syphilis. That seems like a pretty national trend that a lot of people are having repeat syphilis cases. 57% of our cases are living with HIV/AIDS, and 11% of our cases named methamphetamine as a risk factor. We actually think that number is a lot higher based on different connections to different people in their network and that sort of thing. That's just the people that named it as a risk factor. So here's a little bit more background. The methamphetamine use increased from 6% of cases in 2014 to 11% in 2015. And when I realized we needed to do something was back in August of 2014. We had a 50-year-old white male MSM meth user. He had a 730 diagnosis. He was a previous 900, and he named 37 initiable partners. And so we investigated those 37 partners, and at that time, myself and our special projects disease intervention specialist, Bodacious Dawson, attempted to, yes, his name is Bodacious, it's pretty awesome. We really worked on establishing a relationship with this guy. This patient really wanted to reach out. He didn't want to change any of his behaviors, but he really wanted to, he basically just wanted us to get all of his partners treated so he could just continue doing what he was doing. So we're like, all right, let's roll with this. So our objective for this project was to identify points of disease intervention that would result in a decrease in the spread of disease and to predict in which populations the disease was likely to spread. So the first thing that we noticed is we had a paper lot system that had seven cases on it. So out of those seven cases, we decided to create a sociogram. We used our centralized electronic statewide surveillance system called SWIMS to further populate the sociogram. Over 200 individuals were identified within the network who were sexual partners, whether they were infected with syphilis or not. The sociogram was then used to identify individuals who appeared best positioned to infect or reinfect partners based on many and concurrent relationships. The other thing that threw a wrench into this was, remember that 50-year-old guy? He had syphilis again in February of 2015, and he was a 720 then. So we had less people to focus on for our intervention because we had already focused on some of them a month before. So 60 individuals were identified for intervention based on the number of links that they had in the sociogram, the number of previous syphilis infections, and a lack of RPR test in the past 3 months. Fortunately or unfortunately, a lot of our syphilis cases are living with HIV, and the Indianapolis providers do routine testing about every 3 to 6 months, so we get a pretty good idea of where our where the syphilis titers are going. So this is the sociogram that Mackenzie and I made by hand, which was actually really fun, like a big whiteboard that had everything on it. You can probably guess where our index patient was on that chart. So we use this, and we've got a couple of outlying people that named meth as a risk factor, but we just couldn't quite link them into the system. Whether they just didn't name partners or they were just withheld a lot of information, but we knew that they were important people. So what we did is March of 2016, we separated DIS into teams of two, and we identified these individuals, and they literally just went out to try to find them to offer testing. Another thing that happened right before we started this was a handful of the people that we were going to identify anyway were named as partners in a 720 case like 2 weeks before. And so we kind of switched focus and added some more people into our focus that weren't originally identified in the network. And once again, our highly connected case came forward and decided he wanted to help. So during the third week of our blitz, if you will, our focused outreach, we actually tested people in his house. It was really fun. So out of the 60 people identified, 20 were found or agreed to testing. Some people we found and they were just like, you know, I've got an ID doc appointment in 2 months or a month. I'm just going to go to that. And we also, like I said, found success in testing the individuals in our guy's house. So 36 people, we got tested. Out of the 36 people we tested, we found 3 new early syphilis cases, 2 new HIV cases. Our 5 positive chlamydia tests and 6 positive gonorrhea tests were all in the throat and rectum and all asymptomatic. And we also found 2 new hepatitis C positive tests and also gained a lot of information about injection drug use in Indianapolis. So we gained not just new people to get treated, but we gained a lot of information about the community. So our conclusion for that was pretty successful case finding. We were also able to gain trust within the MSM community, and especially in the methamphetamine using community. And we also started regularly testing at this guy's house. Because why not? I mean, kitchen table, bathroom, clean surface, we're good to go. We were also able to expand our sociogram after some. So everything at first we did by hand. And then luckily our medical director is super smart, and so she went to a social, like a networking class, and was able to help us expand the sociogram to this. So that's fun. It still bothers me that there's still those few little outliers that are still not connected. But once again, I think you can probably find our guy in the middle again. So this is like, so whoa, what do we do now? So this is what we're doing now. We continue our relationship with our guy. Many in the network are also HIV positive, so we've just started talking to our infectious disease providers regarding more consistent RPR testing. Sometimes our ID doctors are hesitant to provide preventive treatment. They're more than willing to test their patients, so we've just been kind of continuing that conversation of preventive treatment because a lot of our patients don't want to come into our clinic. I mean, they can go to their doctor. Why do they want to come into our clinic? Another conversation that we've started, but we don't have any data for, so don't ask me for it, is a prescription for consistent doxycycline. There have been some success in that, but not enough to bring forward for evidence. And then another thing that we need to start considering in the future is bringing the testing and the treatment to the patient instead of the patient coming to the clinic. So having a clinician go in the field and treat the person in their home. Some further network analysis stuff, which is very, very new to me, so don't ask too many questions, is measuring your centrality and cohesion. So centrality is basically the characteristic of a person's position in a network, and that can help you base where you need to do your intervention. And cohesion is the minimal number of people in a social network that need to be removed to disconnect the group. So, and then fragmentation is just breaking down a huge network into smaller groups, and so you can concentrate your prevention efforts into that group. The software that we used for the network analysis was USENET 6. And then the class that our medical director went to was at the University of Kentucky, an introduction to analyzing network data, and it was called the LINX workshop. So if you have any more interest in that, I'd Google that. So that's all I got. What kind of questions do you guys have?
Hey, Brooke Hoots, Division of HIV AIDS Prevention at CDC. So you said most of them were injecting meth?
Some were injecting meth.
Okay. Do you know, were they sharing needles?
No. Well, actually, so once again, our guy was giving needles to people.
Do you know where he was getting the needles?
We do not have syringe exchange in Indianapolis.
I know.
He was not getting the needles from us.
Okay.
Other than that, you know, I mean, I think he had other medical conditions to where he was able to pick up needles at a pharmacy.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you guys had considered applying for Marion County to get needle exchange just as a
So I'm here. That decision is over here.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks. That was really interesting.
My name is Mario Peregrino, DIS at the LA LGBT Center. Mm-hmm. In terms of all these patients, were you able to track whether any of them were homeless or, you know, incarcerated? And how effective were you at treating those patients that were homeless or incarcerated?
So we didn't have any of those patients that were incarcerated, but okay. We're actually, when we have somebody that's incarcerated, I actually really like it because it's really easy to get to them because they can't go anywhere.
Okay.
But as far as homeless, I wouldn't necessarily, there's a definitely out of those people that we tracked down, we found them at our guy's house.
Okay.
Because he may have other methods of making money that would make people go to his house.
Okay. Right.
So.
Alrighty.
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, Christina Rodriguez. Sorry, I'm at Hopkins now, but I used to be at the Florida State STD program, and we did a similar thing about 4 years ago where we found a couple guys with syphilis in Orlando who had very big networks, and so we did sociograms and such. We didn't get nearly like as much of a complex network as you, and I was wondering if what kind of were your time parameters for inclusion of someone in the network, because what I found with a lot of networks that I've seen published is that they'll include anybody who's ever named, and actually for a bacterial STI, they may no longer be relevant or weren't relevant at the time of the actual cluster that you're looking at, because maybe they were a partner named, you know, 2 years ago in your system. So I was just kind of wondering how you set time parameters to make sure that the network was relevant to each other.
Those were all 2015 contacts.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would comment that a lot of my chlamydia patients claim that they haven't had sex with anyone for 2 years or something.
Well, they're telling the truth.
Yeah, they might be.
Yeah.
So I identified this guy as a dealer from your sociogram. What are you doing to limit your legal exposure for your impromptu testing lab that you have at his house?
So we actually have a pretty good relationship with the police department and the vice unit. We have other projects that require us to have that kind of relationship with them. We have a sex worker project where we take a van out to do outreach specifically to sex workers. So they're familiar with us, and all we have to do, like when they see our van, they know what we're doing, and they leave us alone.
Okay.
Yeah. And he's not, like, a high-level dealer, so, yeah. I mean, he's not pulling in, like, hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. And
no,
yeah.
I did have one other question. Yeah, because he's spending it. But
Well, right, yeah.
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 How much of that was transactional sex? Did you collect data on that?
We did not collect data on that, and if you asked him, none of it would be transactional sex. But that's something we could probably look at in the future. It's kind of a shaky relationship with that, so it kind of gets we'd have to figure out how to do that without him knowing we're doing that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, guys.